Hello and welcome to this Microsoft TechNext session on improvements to calendaring in Exchange 2007. My name is Robin McManus. Let's start this session by going into more detail on exactly what we will be covering. In today's session, we'll discuss how Exchange Server 2007 makes personal and group scheduling more reliable and easier to do. We'll talk about reliability, the Exchange Products Group's key focus in making sure that the users' calendars are up to date, and, in some cases, change the workflow a little bit, both on Outlook Web Access and Outlook to make sure organizers and attendees don't make mistakes that can get calendars out of sync. We'll discuss those changes in the session. It's important to ensure that calendars are up to date. With earlier free busy publishing, there's always some latency. So in Exchange 2007, the product group has striven to remove that latency. We'll take a look at that now. Later, we'll discuss resource mailboxes, such as rooms and equipment, and the specific Active Directory changes made to support these new recipient types. We'll handle the server-side automation of the scheduling processes for resources, which makes handling meetings far easier. All of these improvements have provided what is commonly referred to as the calendar concierge. The concierge consists of several core components, each of which will be covered today. These are the calendar attendant, the scheduling assistant, the resource booking attendant, and the availability web service. As with most TechNext sessions, some prior experience of Microsoft technologies or similar technologies is always helpful. Here's a brief overview of what will be helpful, but not essential for this session. As we go through today's session, you will hear various Microsoft acronyms and terminology. While we'll explain all new terms related to today's session, there are some general terms from the industry or from other versions of Microsoft products that we may not spend time on. To help you out, we have listed the areas that it may be helpful to be familiar with, either prior to the session or reference afterwards. It would be helpful to have some IT administration experience with Microsoft Exchange Server 2003, Exchange 2000 Server, or Exchange Server 5.5. In addition, knowledge of how to book a meeting using either Outlook or Outlook Web Access will be useful. To cover the topics mentioned and keep the session flow going, we have divided the session up into the following agenda items. First, we're going to examine how the scheduling assistant works by providing improved free busy information and helping meeting organizers find a good time and place to meet. Next, we'll take a look at the calendar attendant, which is a new server-side feature that keeps the calendar up to date. Later in the session, we'll discuss resource mailboxes. We'll see how to create and customize a resource mailbox and see how you can configure those mailboxes for automatic scheduling, which is done using the new resource booking attendant. Finally, we'll touch on two areas where Exchange 2007 has really expanded the scope of calendar access by making things available from your phone and web services. Before we start, we'll take a look at the challenges surrounding scheduling and calendaring. With Exchange Server 2003, the calendaring is handled on the client side. This has some major disadvantages. First, when a meeting request gets sent to you, Outlook has a process that sees the request and automatically places it on your calendar as tentative. The problem is that if you don't have Outlook running, it won't be placed on your calendar. Second, if you have a rule that moves the request to a different folder, it may not get noticed and put on your calendar as tentative at all. Different people have different client-side settings, and this can cause meeting requests to get lost somewhere in all the confusion. If you're in an environment where people like to schedule a lot of meetings, it can be really time-consuming to schedule a meeting with various people. You often end up sending multiple meeting updates, and usually the reason for needing multiple updates is that the organizer was making a scheduling decision that was based on data that was out of date, unavailable, or perhaps too difficult to interpret as there was so much of it. All of this makes scheduling a little tricky. So in Exchange 2007, meeting processing is moved to the server. There are many advantages to using server-side calendaring. First, if you're using Outlook 2007, it will no longer automatically make those requests as tentative. The Exchange server will do it for you instead. This means that meetings are up to date. Second, if you receive a meeting update, the server is able to tell you that this refers to something on your calendar and is able to do things like delete redundant meeting updates. For example, let's say someone invites you to a meeting, you accept, and then this person sends an update with a new room. Then he or she sends an update with a new document, and then this same person sends an update with a new attendee list. This is a familiar scenario. What Exchange 2007 will actually do is delete any of those requests that are redundant, so that you only see the most up-to-date version. This actually covers previous versions of Outlook, as well as Outlook Web Access, Exchange, ActiveSync, and Unified Messaging, so your calendar will be more accurate than ever before. We're going to see all of this in a demo later. By providing server-side, always-on meeting processing, the Exchange product group has significantly simplified the process of arranging meetings, as information will be more up-to-date than was possible previously. And with the addition of auto-tentative placements of new meetings and auto-update existing meetings, you won't get overwhelmed with the quantity of scheduling information flowing through the organization. In this section, we'll look at the Scheduling Assistant and how it will make scheduling meetings easier. The Scheduling Assistant automatically recommends the best days and times for a meeting, provides a simple color-coded interface for schedule management, and allows you to set your office hours. We'll touch on the changes to free busy information, improvements to out-of-office functionality, and discuss how the Availability Web Service works. The Availability Web Service allows you to share your calendar information and determine what information is shared and with whom you share it. You can set different permission levels for each person who shares your calendar. We'll see how later. Let's start with a look at improvements to free busy information. A couple of core things about free busy data. First, the data is now live. A common complaint with earlier versions of Exchange Server is that free busy data can be out of date. This is because there is a latency as clients publish their free busy data to the supporting public folders, and that the free busy data replicates to other instances of the public folder on different public folder servers. This latency can be up to 15 minutes and more in some cases. And if your organization spans several locations, even longer. In Exchange 2007, the free busy data is provided right off the calendar in both Outlook Web Access and a new release of Outlook through a new web service called the Availability Service. The data is based on the user's calendar data rather than the published folder data, so that the data will always be up to date. This should make for significantly better scheduling. As you're probably aware, public folders are no longer required for any aspect of Exchange Server. And while this is also true for calendaring, consider those organizations that have a mix of clients and servers and who will still require public folder based on free busy information. Well, they're still supported by Exchange 2007. We'll look at the details of both native 2007 and mixed 2007 installations and the availability service a little later. In Exchange 2003, if a user decides to publish his or her free busy data, there's really no way to control who has access to it. It's open to any other user with an Outlook client who looks up the scheduling grid. For that reason, some users want to protect their free busy data and won't publish it at all, which obviously makes scheduling trickier. In Exchange 2007, users are provided with new calendar permissions that will allow them to control who has access to their free busy information. Additionally, users can determine what level of detail they wish to share, from none through to simple free busy, known as classic free busy, or more detailed information, including subject and location through to full access. Exchange Server also provides working hours, including the user's time zone. So we talked about the fact that Exchange Product Group wanted to make scheduling a meeting easier for users, and we discussed that when you're scheduling with busy people who have lots of meetings, it can be really hard to find a time to meet. So to address this, the new availability web services that provide free busy will also provide clients with suggestions on the best days and times to meet in the coming weeks. Although there is an existing tool in Outlook, now called AutoPick, which usually identifies perfect times with no conflicts with a set of attendees, its perfect suggestions are usually too far in the future to be valuable, especially if you're dealing with busy people with hectic calendars. So the availability service provides suggestions. These suggestions are sorted in a list of time slots for each day, with a ranking based on conflicts and working hours. It also includes less than perfect suggestions. To make all this easy, it's provided in a color-coded data picker to help you find a slot. Finding a room to have your meeting in is pretty important too. So each suggestion includes available rooms. The user can pick a time and a room with one click. And all of this is available in both OWA and Outlook. Let's take a closer look at the Availability Web Service. An Exchange server has an ability that an Exchange client does not. The server can look at a person's actual mailbox and calendar to determine whether he or she is free at a particular time. In Exchange 2007, this information is exposed as a web service that Outlook 2007 and Outlook Web Access 2007 will use in place of FreeBSY. Another dimension of this feature is that it is configured to get live FreeBSY information from another source. For example, if you set up a trust between two forests, your users will automatically be able to get FreeBSY information for people they have as contacts in your forest, but who are actually users in another resource forest. This is great for B2B or merger scenarios. This is deployed on every Exchange 2007 client access server. Outlook 2007 will automatically find out which client access server to use through a process called auto-discover, which we'll talk about in a moment, and public folders are still used by Outlook 2003 clients. One of the things that you have heard about Exchange 2007 is that it enables you to get rid of public folders. This is an optional thing. There are at least two requirements for this. All the clients will have to be using Outlook 2007, because Outlook 2002 clients will expect to use the public folders for FreeBSY information. As we've just seen, second, Outlook 2003 and earlier clients expect an offline address book that uses the public folders. Now we're going to walk through some availability web service scenarios. The first scenario shows how the scheduling service works in an Outlook 2007 Exchange 2007 environment. We create a meeting request and we want to invite John and Amy. The scheduling assistant knows the URL of our local availability service, so it's requested FreeBSY over SOAP. At this point, the availability service analyzes the request and determines which attendees are local and which ones are remote. In this case, John is in the same Active Directory site as the client access server that we're using, so his FreeBSY information is requested directly from the mailbox server using MAPI. Amy is in a remote site, so the local availability service makes an SOAP call to the remote availability service to request her FreeBSY status. The local availability service then combines the local and remote results and returns them to the client. An important part of calendaring is out of office. Before our first demonstration, let's look at some of the improvements made to this feature. Let's see how the same scenario works with mixed clients and servers. In this scenario, Amy's mailbox is on Exchange 2003 server. Step 1 is exactly the same here. Again, the local availability service determines which attendees are local or remote. The availability service also determines which version of Exchange server the attendee mailbox is running on. John's FreeBSY info is retrieved from the local mailbox server using MAPI. In step 2, the availability service determines that Amy was on an Exchange 2003 server, so it makes a HTTP request to the Outlook Web Access FreeBSY URL on the public folder server that is holding Amy's FreeBSY information. Once again, the availability service combines all the results and returns them to the client. In this scenario, Outlook 2003 and earlier clients continue to use the public folders for the FreeBSY lookups. An important part of calendaring is out of office. Before our first demonstration, let's look at some of the improvements made to this feature. Most of the out of office functionality enhancements have come directly from the customer feedback. You can now schedule your out of office notification by setting a start and end time for your out of office message. This means you can set it and forget it. You won't find yourself suddenly remembering that you haven't set your out of office when you're already on the plane to TechEd or whatever. In addition, users now have far more control over who receives external messages, which helps reduce the risk of your organization from spam. You can configure both internal and a separate external message. By external, we mean an out-of-office message that will be sent to recipients that are not part of your organization. You can also further restrict this to only external recipients who are in your contacts list. The administrator can continue to block who can turn on external messages and limit the domains that they go to. On to our first demo. In this demonstration, we're going to take a look at scheduling an out-of-office message, configuring our working hours, securing FreeBSY access, and setting up a meeting. Let's start with a demonstration of some of the new features provided by the scheduling assistant. These include out-of-office assistant, which can now be scheduled, so you can set it and forget it. In this first part of the demonstration, we'll use Microsoft Office Outlook Web Access. Later, we'll use the Microsoft Office Outlook 2007. So let's open Internet Explorer first. We enter the Outlook web address. We are prompted to configure our language settings. This setting is remembered server-side, so no matter where you are in the world, you can use Outlook Web Access with your preferred language. Even if the computer you're sitting at is in an internet cafe in Paris, which would be rather nice, so we select the language, and then click the Options menu and click Out of Office Assistant. This is similar to what you will see in the Outlook 2007 Office Assistant as well. You can now configure the out-of-office assistant to start and end at a particular time. This is something that many users have asked for. Also, you can now have HTML out-of-office messages, no longer just plain text. You can even have a separate out-of-office message for external senders. You might choose to send messages that just notify those particular users that they're not going to get a response from you right away. You can choose to send this to external senders from your contact list, or you can send it to all external senders. Click Save, and your out-of-office reply is set up. These same out-of-office improvements are also available in Outlook 2007. Next, we'll look at configuring working hours. Let's just click the calendar options on the left. We'll configure the working week to start on a Monday. 8 o'clock seems a little early to start the working day. Let's start the day at 9 o'clock a.m. instead. And we're done. What's new here is that the settings are remembered server-side, so your colleagues can determine your availability even if you're offline. Next, we're going to look at securing free, busy access. Let's look at this from Outlook 2007. First, we'll access the Outlook Options page and then click Calendar Options. This dialog box contains the options for configuring working hours that we just saw in the last segment. While we're here, let's change these settings to match Holly's. Monday for the start of the week and at 9 a.m. start each day. Now let's configure the free, busy security. We're going to grant Holly a high level of access to Spencer's calendar. Anonymous users, however, cannot see his calendar appointments. Now, let's select Holly and then grant her the permissions to see what Spencer is doing and where he is. That's the free, busy, time, subject, location option. These are read permissions only. Clearly, if you wanted to grant a level of delegate access on your mailbox calendar, you'd need to grant some write permissions, but we're going to use these settings for now. Let's confirm those settings. That was straightforward, and remember, all these settings are stored server-side. In this last segment of the demo, we're going to look at creating an appointment. We'll keep it simple for the moment. Let's just select the calendar and then change to the work week view. Let's select new to create the appointment. We enter the subject of team briefing, and then we'll use the scheduling assistant to help us complete the process of booking the meeting. We'll set the date and time first, next Thursday at 11 a.m. for 1 hour. Now let's invite Spencer. We'll search for his name in the address list. Just type Spencer and click the little magnifying glass. There he is. Let's just see if he's free. He has some time booked out, but we'll proceed anyway for the moment. You notice how the assistant highlights scheduling conflicts. You can see from the blue bar that Spencer is busy at this time. In the pane on the right, the scheduling assistant has made some suggestions as to an appropriate time for the meeting. Before we can sort this out, we need a room. Let's select one of the meeting rooms. As you know, resources like rooms have explicit types in Exchange 2007. They also have their own address lists, so finding resources is much easier. We'll look at that in more detail later, and we'll just keep it simple for now. We'll select a room from the link. We won't check the availability of the room, although we could. Let's hold our meeting with Spencer in Huron. It's obvious that 11 a.m. won't work since Spencer can't make it. We choose a recommended time from the list of suggestions that the assistant has made. Let's choose 1 p.m. There. That's how easy it is to set up a meeting. With help from the scheduling assistant, later, we look at handling conflicts and updates. For now, we'll return to the presentation. Let's return to the agenda. In this section, we'll discuss the calendar attendant. The calendar attendant automatically places new meetings on the calendar as tentative appointments, updates existing meetings with new information, and deletes out-of-date meeting updates. First, let's summarize what the attendant can do to help with scheduling appointments and meetings. The calendar attendant is all about keeping your calendar up to date, and is provided as a server-side component. It acts in a manner similar to what happens in Outlook 2003 on the client computer. However, because it's server-side, it's in a better position to keep your calendar accurate and up-to-date. There's a background thread in Outlook 2003 that automatically adds new meetings to your calendar when a meeting request comes in. The appointment is placed on the calendar as tentative. The same thread also updates the appointment when attendees respond to the meeting invitation. However, one of the big advantages of putting this kind of code in your server is that it's always on. So when you log on through Outlook Web Access, sync your calendar with a mobile device, or call into your calendar in Exchange 2007 using any phone, you can be sure that your calendar is going to reflect the latest meeting updates. We'll also see in a moment that the attendant does more than keep the calendar up to date. It also reduces the number of meeting messages that the user needs to act on and help the user identify what changes have been made since receiving the meeting update. So how does the calendar attendant do all this? The calendar attendant acts as part of the delivery process. And as a meeting request or response is delivered, the calendar attendant will go and create or update the relevant calendar item. There is one exception to this. If you get a request or response from an external sender, somebody outside your Exchange organization, that request or response will be processed after delivery. There's also a nice feature that the attendant provides on mail submissions. In addition to processing messages on delivery, the attendant will check if a meeting request is being forwarded to another user. If a meeting request is being forwarded and the user who is forwarding the request is not the organizer but a delegate, a notification will be sent to the organizer from the calendar attendant. The notification indicates that the meeting request was forwarded to a particular recipient. When that notification is delivered to the organizer, the calendar attendant will add the forwarded recipients to the organizer's attendees list, so they are included in any subsequent updates or cancellations that the organizer sends out later. This is a big way that meetings can get out of sync with organizers and attendees, and the calendar attendant helps address this. With all these meeting requests and updates flying about, it's easy to get confused about where and when the meeting is happening. The calendar attendant strives to remove this meeting noise. Another thing that is nice about the attendant is that it's after delivery. The attendant will remove the clutter that is generated from the meeting updates and responses. Old updates and responses that can often confuse legacy clients will be deleted. The attendant is also responsible for highlighting the changes in the meeting. For example, if you change the time or replace the body text of a meeting request, those changes will be marked on the request itself. Both Outlook Web Access and Outlook 2007 will display those changes so that the user can quickly pick them up. Finally, one last thing the calendar attendant does is that it marks some meeting updates as informational. An informational update is basically any update that does not affect the time of the meeting. The nice thing about these informational updates is that you can delete them without affecting the meeting at all. That's a change from the previous version of Exchange when every update needed to be acted upon or you risk deleting the item automatically from your calendar. Let's take a look at another demonstration now. Let's see how this works. A meeting request or response arrives at the server hosting the Hub Transport role in a given Active Directory site. The Hub Transport server checks the mailbox to see if the calendar attendant is enabled. Remember, it's possible to disable the attendant on mailboxes from the shell. This might be appropriate for a resource mailbox, such as a meeting room, that you want to manually schedule. Assuming that the attendant is enabled, the calendar is updated before the client rules are run. Any changes to existing meetings are highlighted as required. The item is now delivered to the inbox, After delivery, the attendant will remove any clutter and process messages from external senders. Let's take a look at another demonstration now. In this demonstration, we'll use the automatic calendar update feature. We'll also take a look at the highlighted changes and informational updates to meeting requests. In this demonstration, we're going to see how the calendar attendant helps simplify the process of creating, modifying, and managing appointments. Spencer has full mailbox rights on Holly's mailbox. This will allow us to view the two calendars side by side and allow you to see the process of updating and modifying without the need to switch screens. Let's start by creating an appointment for Friday. The calendar attendant highlights an issue with our calendar. There's a conflict. We better choose another day. Let's go for next Wednesday at noon. We call this meeting Coho Sale. Let's get the scheduling assistant to help us pick a room and add attendees. We'll keep it simple, we'll just invite Holly Holt. Now let's use the room picker. Let's add a quick description for an appointment. This is an urgent briefing following Frank Miller's recent telephone call. Now we send that invite. Currently, the appointment is showing in Holly's calendar, but as tentative. Let's switch to Outlook Web Access and accept that invite. You can accept straight from the preview pane, so there's no need to open the message. Now we switch back to Spencer's mailbox. The appointment has been accepted, and the status has been updated in Holly's schedule. The status of the appointment in Holly's calendar has changed to confirmed. It's worth noting that changes like this are live. That is, they happen immediately, so the calendar is up to the minute, up to date. That in itself makes it far easier to manage appointments. Let's see what happens if we change the time of the appointment. We'll pick a time that we know conflicts with something in Holly's schedule. As a result, the conflicting appointment has been set to tentative in Holly's schedule. In this part of the demo, we'll look at how the calendar attendant handles changes, highlights important updates, and makes less significant changes silently. Let's see if we can't straighten out the conflicting appointment. First, let's switch to Outlook Web Access again and look at the new invite. In the preview pane, the calendar attendant has highlighted a significant change, the time and date. It's also highlighted a conflict. Let's see what the conflict is. We can do this without switching to calendar view. There's a lunch appointment we don't want to miss. For now, we'll do nothing and wait for Spencer to realize his mistake. We'll choose a time we know Holly is free and send the update. We can see the appointment's update on Holly's schedule right away. If we go back to Outlook Web Access, the message relating to the first update is gone. It's confusing for attendees to receive multiple updates to a meeting, so the calendar attendant presents us with only the latest update if a series has recently arrived. We accept this change, but we need to let Spencer know that Ontario is being decorated next week, although it doesn't show in the schedule, so he needs to pick another room. We see the acceptance from Holly telling us about the room being decorated. Let's change the room. We'll use the scheduling assistant again. Deselect Ontario and now browse and select Air. This meeting status hasn't changed. The time and place remains the same, just the venue is different. The calendar attendant doesn't complicate things by changing the status back to tentative for a room change. Back to Holly's mailbox in Outlook Web Access, no response is required since this is an informal update only. Later, we'll look at how you can manage resources so that you can avoid situations where someone's schedule is not up to date to reflect remodeling work being undertaken. Let's go back to the presentation. Let's return to the agenda. In this section, we'll discuss something that a lot of customers are already using in Outlook, but there's been no real support for in Exchange until now: resource mailboxes. We will look at the details of these resource mailboxes, how to set them up, and how to manage their properties. Exchange 2007 adds schema extensions to Active Directory that allow you to mark a mailbox as being a resource. To support the mailbox, you'll need to create a user account and then disable the account, as, generally, resource mailboxes are not used like regular mailboxes. Once the mailbox is created and marked as a resource, you can use a resource-specific properties to define the resource as a room or a piece of equipment. You can put particular properties on these mailboxes, such as room capacity or the make of the TV or projector that you have. Custom-defined properties can include anything such as a widescreen TV. And when you're in the address book, there's a specific room-based address book that you can search. Finally, you can search on your custom properties. For example, you can search for all the widescreen TVs that are available for use in a meeting. Next is the resource booking attendant. To help users find resources, Exchange Server adds a new All Rooms address list, which automatically includes all resource mailboxes that are rooms. This address list has appropriate resource-related columns. On Outlook and Outlook Web Access, in the meeting form, Exchange adds a room picker, which defaults to the All Rooms address list, but allows you to browse and find resources and rooms based on their location or any custom tags that you've added to them. In addition, rooms are automatically resolved as resource recipients when you type them into the meeting form, so you don't have to train all your organizers to add rooms as resource attendees to get the location string populated automatically. Let's return to the agenda. Let's have a look at some of this in our next demonstration. In this demo, we'll create a resource mailbox. In this demo, we'll take a look at creating resource mailboxes. There are a number of ways of doing this. In Exchange Server 2007, the administration of Active Directory can be separated from the administration of Exchange, so that, for example, one administrator can create Active Directory objects like users and groups, and the Exchange administrator mail enables them. Alternatively, you can perform both tasks simultaneously, assuming you have the necessary permissions in both Exchange and Active Directory. To create a new resource-based mailbox, you use the new mailbox command, either from the shell or from the console. To create a mailbox from a user account that already exists, use the enable mailbox command. Again, this can be executed from the shell or the console. In the first part of the demo, we'll create user accounts and then use the shell to mailbox enable them. Let's start by opening Active Directory users and computers and creating a couple of user accounts. First, let's create an OU, training rooms. Now, let's add those accounts. We'll use relevant names, training room 1 and 2. Also, we must remember that the user accounts must be disabled. Enter the full name, training room 1. The logon name will be TR1. We'll use the usual password, disable the account, and set the password to never expire. Let's create a second account, training room 2. Same account properties, just different name, same password. Disable the account and set the password to not expire. And we're finished. Let's close Active Directory, Users and Computers. Now let's use the shell to mailbox enable the accounts for users' resources. Quickly type the command, the first part of which gets a list of user accounts. The second part filters this list to produce a subset of users that match the name training room something. The final part enables a mailbox and uses the room switch to configure the object as a resource. The shell returns a list of newly enabled mailboxes. We can check this by querying for a list of resource mailboxes that are rooms as opposed to equipment. Let's try that. The list returned indicates some previously created mailboxes. We can also use the shell to define additional properties for objects like rooms, such as their capacity or location. This is helpful when searching for suitable resources. You might need a room with an overhead projector, for example, so defining properties like that would be helpful to your users. Let's make a few of those sorts of changes. We'll configure the first training room with a capacity of 8, and the other room with double that capacity. Now let's use Outlook Web Access to test those settings. We're still connected as Holly. Let's create a quick appointment. We'll use the scheduling assistant again and browse all available rooms. If we adjust the window, we can see that the room capacity shows in the list. We'll cancel this appointment. Don't forget that although we used the shell to enable the mailboxes, you can just as easily use the console, although the shell might be easier and quicker once you get to speed on the syntax. Next, let's take a look at creating a new mailbox for a training room resource in a single step using the console. Remember that you can also create new mailboxes using the new mailbox command from the shell as well. Let's open the console. Next, we click the Recipient Configuration Work Center and use the Action Pane link to start the new mailbox wizard. We must remember to set the mailbox as a resource mailbox, and then click Next to proceed. This is a mailbox for a new user, so the wizard loads the necessary pages to configure the Active Directory user account. We want to place the account in the same OU as the other training rooms, so we'll browse to that. Then we just complete the page with the required details. Exchange will automatically create the account in a disabled state, so we don't need to. Finally, verify the settings and click New to create both the user account and the mailbox. Now that's done, let's use the GUI to modify the resource capacity for this training room. 12 seems fine, so we have three rooms that seat 8, 12, and 16. You can create and manage the resource mailboxes from either the command line using the shell or from within the console. You can perform single-step administration by using the new mailbox command, or multi-step administration, if you need it, by using the enable mailbox command. Let's return to the presentation. Let's return to the agenda. The resource booking attendant is based on resources that you want to book that can be attended or declined, such as a room or projector. Previous versions of Exchange Server shipped with something called the Auto Accept Attendant. The resource booking attendant is a superset of the Auto Accept. In this section, we'll take a close look at the way that the booking attendant works. First, let's understand how the attendant can help. If you're familiar with resource booking in previous versions of Exchange, you know that there are two Outlook Exchange solutions that help automate room booking. One is client-based, Outlook Direct Booking, which involves setting permissions on the room's calendar. The other is server-based. It's actually a web downloaded that the Exchange product group make available for Exchange 2003, called the Exchange 2003 Auto Accept Agent. To sum up those two existing solutions, the client approach with direct booking gives you good control over who can book a room, but the Exchange Auto Accept Agent in 2003 gives you control over when the room can be booked and how you can handle conflicts. So in Exchange 2007, the Exchange product group wanted to give customers the best of both, hence the resource booking attendant. The basic functionality of this is an agent that runs on the resource mailboxes. If you invite a room for a meeting and it's free at that time, it will go ahead and accept the meeting request. You will receive confirmation in the same way as if you invited Bob from HR or Kathy from IT. If somebody else asks for that meeting room for the same time period after you'd received your confirmation, he or she would be declined. No client computer needs to be connected to the mailbox to make this function. It's a server-side solution. You can do things like limit how much in advance a resource can be booked, who can book a particular resource, and set a maximum duration for use of the resource. You can also set resources to only be available during working hours. With Office Outlook 2007 and Outlook Web Access 2007 clients, forward out-of-policy resources requests to delegates for approval. Configure custom response messages per resource. Provide conflict information for declined meetings. Configurable permissions allow you to protect the contents of sensitive appointments, and the attendant will even provide helpful feedback in response to meeting requests. Let's look at managing attendant settings. All the settings related to resource mailbox management can be controlled centrally by an Exchange admin from the shell. This is an easy way to configure multiple resources quickly and efficiently. You can optionally delegate control to a user defined as resource manager. Let's have a look at management from the resource manager's perspective. If you have a resource like a training room, you may decide that it's a good idea to delegate the management of the room to an appropriate user. Perhaps the training administrator in this case, he or she can control access to the room and control the scheduling of associated resources, projects, and so on. You must grant the appropriate individual full mailbox rights on the resource mailbox. You can quickly grant those permissions in the shell. Thereafter, the user can use Outlook Web Access to manage all resource mailbox appointments. Without going into too much detail, the Exchange Resource Booking Attendant is a server-side superset of both the Exchange 2003 Auto Accept Agent and the Outlook Client-Side Direct Booking features. However, some key new features are the ability to specify a maximum meeting duration, the ability for the administrator to define working hours so that a room can't be booked when it's physically locked for the night, and the ability to allow or disallow conflicts. Where Exchange has really made the biggest improvements is in allowing you to control who can book a room without having to grant permissions on the calendar. Let's have a look at controlling access to resources. The administrator is able to define booking permissions on the resources. These permissions are none, in which all requests are declined, request in policy, which means that the request requires approval, book in policy, which means that the request is automatically accepted, and request out of policy, which again requires approval. It's worth noting that no permissions need to be granted on the calendar itself. In addition, rather than simply decline a request when, perhaps, you have an important people wanting to use the room, the request booking attendant can forward that request to a delegate who can handle the rescheduling of conflicts and so on. In the meantime, the user will receive a pending approval reply from the attendant. Let's have a quick look at security issues arising from resource booking. Two of the biggest requests the Exchange product group got about Exchange 2003 Auto Accept Agent was to remove the subject line from the meeting once it's placed on the calendar. This will prevent people from seeing sensitive content, even if they have permission to view the calendar. Second, to add the organizer's name to the subject so it will be known who has the time slot, even if the subject of that meeting is unknown. Exchange 2007 does both of these. The attendant also provides an ability to customize the response on a per mailbox basis with HTML messages rather than plain text. Finally, when a conflict occurs, it ensures that the name of the organizer of a conflicting event is provided, so a resolution between the conflicting parties is easier to facilitate. Let's return to the agenda for a moment. Let's move to our final demo. In this demo, we'll look at managing the resource booking attendant settings from Outlook Web Access and restrict who can book them. In your organization, you probably have someone who is responsible for managing training or conference room usage. Although Exchange Server is perfectly capable of handling appointments for resources like rooms and projectors, you may want to exert more administrative control. In this demo, we'll take a look at administering room resources from Outlook Web Access. First, we need to determine who the resource manager is. Let's use Holly. As she's the training administrator, she can be assigned overall control of the three training rooms we created. We need to grant Holly permissions to manage the resources, which we'll do from the shell. We'll just enter a quick command which uses the add mailbox permission command to grant Holly's rights. It's a three-part command, although we could have used a for each loop on a collection of training rooms to achieve the same result, but this is probably quicker. Minimize the shell, then open Outlook Web Access. Connect to SMBEX01, enter the password. In the upper right corner, there is a link we can use to switch between mailboxes in OWA. Let's switch to Training Room 1's mailbox. Because this is the first time Training Room 1 has been connected, we need to define the language. All room configuration is handled through the options on the mailbox. The first thing we should do is enable automatic meeting processing. We select the relevant checkbox. We want to be sure no one tries to book a room out of working hours, which we'll need to set on calendar options in a moment. Because training courses can recur, we'll allow recurring bookings. Next, let's look at who can book a room. We'll allow Holly to automatically book a room. Now we will let Spencer book a room, but his request must be manually verified by Holly. Let's add some text that will be included in email communications with meeting organizers so they know their request is pending approval. Now let's save those changes. Let's just set the office hours for this room, click calendar options, configure the working week, and then configure a start time of 9 a.m. Save those changes. We'll switch to Outlook 2007 and Spencer will book a training course. We select a time next Monday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Enter the subject sales training. Then we can use the scheduling assistant to select some attendees, Frank and Claire. Next, let's select the training room 1 in this case. Switch back to the appointment and enter some text in the invite to stress the importance of the course, such as product briefing. You must make time to attend. Then we'll send that. Now let's switch back to the mail. The room has responded with a tentative placement of our appointment on the calendar with a message that Holly added, "Your meeting request is being considered." In time, the nominated delegate will confirm our booking, but meanwhile we can go ahead and organize a lunch. We can see how straightforward it has been to set up and configure resource mailboxes. Obviously, what we have just done through Outlook Web Access can also be done through the shell, but that is beyond the scope of this demonstration. Let's return to the presentation. Let's return to the agenda for a moment. In this final section, we'll quickly touch on the improvements made to client-side calendaring access, that is, the ability to access your calendar from a variety of client devices and with a number of client protocols. As this expanded client access requires unified messaging, we'll quickly review that first. The Exchange product group designed the unified messaging server role to unify the mailbox and to integrate the traditional items found in a mailbox, such as emails and calendar items, with faxes and voice messages. They also sought to simplify administrative tasks by consolidating the infrastructure required to support both email and telephony in a single unified system. The unified messaging server consists of several components. First, the automated attendant, which functions as an automated telephone answering service. When you call Microsoft, you'll hear the auto attendant working. It's configured to use voice recognition and then access the global address list to route calls to the appropriate person or department. It's expensive to employ receptionists. This facility could offer your company some real cost savings. Although it's configured to use voice recognition at Microsoft, you can also use voice prompts such as press 7 for sales, and so forth. Second, call answering. When your unanswered calls get routed as emails to your mailbox, if you are available, the call will be routed to the UM server to your extension. But if you're not, you'll receive an email with the voice message attached. What's more, you can access this voice message from a variety of different clients, such as OWA, EAS, and Outlook. Third, the fax receiving service will route faxes based on your instructions. If you have a single fax number for your organization, faxes will be routed to a single mailbox for onward distribution. If you have a telephone number and a fax number, faxes are routed straight to your own inbox. Finally, if you have a single number for faxes and telephone calls, if you answer an incoming fax call, you can use Outlook Voice Access to route it to a fax machine. If you don't answer the call, the UM server routes the fax to your mailbox automatically. While the previous three features are important, it's the last one, Outlook Voice Access, that enables you to access your mailbox items from a phone. And in the context of this session, allows you to access your calendar from your phone. As with other voice access systems, you can press 7 to delete, 3 to read again, and so on. But what's really great here is that you can use voice recognition to instruct the system to clear a calendar, read the next message, add a contact, make an appointment, and so on. Unified messaging makes it possible for you to access your calendar with any phone, not just a smartphone, and get your next appointment from Exchange. You can also navigate your appointments using the voice interface. You can cancel and decline appointments, send a message saying you're going to be late for an appointment, or if you're on the road, stuck in traffic, and more. The other area that the products group has invested in is the programmability side. As programmability through web services is important, we've already mentioned the availability service as a web service that gives you read-only access to calendar data. But we have other web services that are available for development for applications that you want to create or modify calendar items or even process meeting messages. Those web services and the methods they expose use the same business logic that is used by the calendar attendant or by Outlook Web Access. Exchange Server 2007 will make sure that the calendars are always up to date. This will reduce the complexity and hassle of creating appointments. And with the introduction of resource mailboxes and the resource booking attendant, it will be easier than ever to manage resources. For the most comprehensive technical information on Microsoft products, visit the TechNet website at www.microsoft.com/TechNet. You can also visit www.microsoft.com/TechNet/ITProExc108 for more information on books, courses, certifications, and other community resources that relate directly to this particular session. There are a number of other resources that are available from Microsoft. Microsoft also has instructor-led courses if you prefer the classroom-style environment. Microsoft Learning develops courseware called Microsoft Official Curriculum, MOC, which includes e-learning, Microsoft Press Books, workshops, clinic, and Microsoft Skills Assessment, MOC, is offered in an instructor-led environment and offers comprehensive training courses for IT professionals in supporting and implementing solutions using the Microsoft products and technologies. The course that best supports this session is Getting Started with Microsoft Exchange Server 2007 Clinic, which is available now. For more information, please visit www.microsoft.com/learning. There's also an assessment program available that can help you test your knowledge. Microsoft Skills Assessment is a free online learning tool. It's an easy way for IT professionals to check their skills. You can quickly check your skills in implementing or managing Microsoft products or business solutions. Just take a short, 30-question assessment and see how well you know your stuff. The skills assessment includes a personalized learning plan, which includes links to Microsoft official curriculum, specific TechNet articles, Microsoft Press Books, and other Microsoft Learning content. There's also a way to measure how well you did compared with others who took the same assessment. Microsoft Skills Assessment is an expanding learning platform. Available now are assessments for Windows Server 2003, including Security and Patch Management, Exchange Server 2003, Windows Storage Server, Office 2003, and all VisualStudio.net. If you want to take your skills assessment to the next level, a number of certification programs are available. In a highly competitive IT job market, how can you differentiate yourself from the next candidate? The Microsoft Certification Program provides that edge. Earning a specific accreditation provides objective validation of the availability to successfully perform critical IT functions. Embraced by industry professionals worldwide, Microsoft certification remains one of the most effective ways to reach long-term career goals and is a surefire way for companies to develop and retain valuable IT staff. There are a number of accreditations available, starting with the basic Microsoft Certified Professional, MCP. You can choose to go on to become a fully certified systems administrator, MCSA, or system engineer, MCSE, or a desktop specialist, MCDST. Away from the infrastructure side, the MCDBA certifications cover Cisco server products. For more information about the certification program, visit www.microsoft.com/learning/MCP. This session was brought to you by TechNet. TechNet has gone through some changes recently, which I'm sure you'll find interesting to hear about.
TechNet Plus subscription introduces its newest offering, TechNet Plus Direct. With TechNet Plus Direct, subscribers get all of the benefits of TechNet Plus for 30% less. Subscribers receive fast, easy access to the tools and information they need to get the most out of Microsoft solutions. A subscription provides IT professionals with immediate online access to all the essential technical resources they need to resolve technical issues faster, get hands-on experience with the latest Microsoft technologies, and build technical skills. Subscribers now get immediate access to all their subscription features in one convenient location, our new online benefits portal. Subscribers get access through subscriber download to Microsoft full version software for evaluation and beta releases without time or feature limits. No more waiting for media shipments. This includes Microsoft Server, Client, and Application Software titles. With full version software, subscribers can make informed decisions about new technologies and deployments at their own pace. For the toughest technical questions, a TechNet Plus subscription also comes with two complimentary professional support incidents. Subscribers can talk to a Microsoft support professional to quickly resolve their mission-critical technical issues fast. TechNet Plus also provides access to over 100 managed news groups. Subscribers can exchange ideas with other professionals and get expert answers to their technical questions within the next business day, guaranteed. In addition, subscribers can also chat with a Microsoft Search Assistant online for help finding the technical resources they need or for assistance with non-technical questions. Subscribers also get access to technical information and tools, including the TechNet Plus library containing the knowledge base, security updates, service packs, resource kits, and more. TechNet Plus offers proven value that far exceeds its cost. The two complimentary professional support incidents alone more than offset the cost of a TechNet Plus subscription. Add to that the evaluation and beta software and other technical resources, and TechNet Plus clearly boosts productivity. Every IT professional on the team needs one. TechNet Plus is available exclusively online without media shipments. For more information, please visit technet.microsoft.com/subscriptions. There are a number of free community resources available on TechNet. You can attend a regular chat with members of the product groups or technology specialists from Microsoft, or you can attend a webcast where you can see sessions like the one you've just watched, but presented live and with the ability to ask questions as you go. You can also read or post questions in public news groups. The news group page lists the available groups and provides an interface from which you can read and post messages. TechNet Plus subscribers can use these groups to post questions, and through their subscription ID, are guaranteed a response from Microsoft support professionals and IT experts by the next business day. The main community site provides a comprehensive list of resources available, more than we can cover on this slide, and the page has some dynamic features with continually updated content. The events page provides dates and details about attending a live TechNet event. These events take place around the world and provide the opportunity for you to talk to Microsoft specialists face-to-face. And finally, the TechNet columns provide a variety of topics written by industry authors. And with that, thank you for taking the time to listen to this TechNet session.